News Radio WJPF. You just were in Utah. How cold was it there?
It was snowing a little bit, Tom, but I came back here, and well, the humidity's here, so the cold here, you get wet. There, it's more dry.
Yeah, 34 right now. Forecast brought to you by Anderson's Furniture and Mattress, with a huge store-wide clearance sale is going on now. Store-wide savings up to 30% or 6 years interest-free financing. The guy I'm laying into for the Utah weather is my friend Joe DeBose. Joe's a political strategist. Now, he's from El Dorado, lives in Marion now, but he works political campaigns literally across this country. And I'm really glad that we could get you in here anytime, Joe, but it's good to have you in the studio, Chief.
It's always great to be here with you, Tom.
You know, I made the decision to invite Joe in last week, and kind of on a gut feeling about New Hampshire tomorrow, but I had no idea that DeSantis was going to do what he did yesterday.
No, it's the DeSantis thing. I was actually kind of expecting it, Tom. They're out of money, and it's a good way to kind of bow out of the campaign gracefully and go ahead and get some of his supporters back he's lost by challenging President Trump.
Well, gosh. Here's the thing. I suffer from a pretty bad case of idealism, but I know you do too. wouldn't you at least, if you're running a race, wait until you get the first vote?
Well, I think the problem, Tom, is he was expected to do better in Iowa than he's going to do better in New Hampshire.
All right, so look at the weather. Look at the dissent that's going on. Why would you take an entire nation and vote on, make a decision based on an Iowa caucus when temperatures were like minus 40?
His poll numbers are like this everywhere, Tom. Right now, it's DeSantis' campaign's been floundering. They're out of cash. They never back down pack. It burned through that cash faster than the Richard Irvin campaign burned through their money here in Illinois.
Yeah,
it's not a good look. You know, DeSantis is trying to save face, get his base back there in Florida, and you know, and maybe take another run at this in 3 years.
Well, my cynical side says he did it because he wants to be the next vice president under Trump.
Well, I think that Trump would need to pick a.
Trump said no to Nikki Haley last week.
Well, you know, Nikki Haley's not somebody that I would want to be my vice president if I were President Trump. You need somebody that can bring in a broader range of people. Like in 2016, you saw Mike Pence come in because Trump was having trouble with evangelicals. This time we're going to see where Trump's having trouble, and then that's where he's going to pick it up. I wouldn't be surprised if it were an Hispanic woman. To kind of help bridge that gap with Hispanics, because Republicans are making major inroads with Hispanic voters right now. And I could see us tapping into that and actually making a good run here in 2020.
It's interesting. I was having a conversation with someone else in Washington, I guess the end of last week, and we were talking about that very subject, the Latino vote. What would that mean in the future? And he says, well, that's what they want the borders open for, because they want them to be Democratic voters. So I said, well, then they're not looking over the horizon. Historically speaking, those voters may in the first generation, but in the second, they don't.
Yep.
There are entire districts in Texas that have flipped Republican because of the Latino vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maya Flores, that special election we won a few years back, that's a prime example of that. So we're making inroads with these voters. They're conservative by nature. They're religious people. They don't want all this woke crap going on at our schools. They don't want it being taught to their kids.
And don't they also learn about where they've been from and the outcome of those policies, Guatemala?
Yeah, Guatemala, Venezuela, these people, they're going to come here. They do not want communism. They don't want socialism. They don't want big government. They want freedom. They're entrepreneurial type people. They're like a lot of what we used to crave here in the United States. I believe that we are an entrepreneurial country. I believe we're a capitalistic country. And I believe the people here do. I mean, we crave freedom. Deep down to our core, whether you're Democrat, you're Republican, at the end of the day, there's going to be a semblance of freedom that you're going to want.
But don't a significant number of people who don't believe in capitalism benefit from it and ignore its prospects and vote otherwise?
There's a lot of people living in basements benefiting from capitalism who claim to hate
it. I hate child labor. Where's my $1,400 phone made by children?
Yeah, they'll continue to buy the Apple products. They'll be the ones in line for the Stanley Cup. They're going to go and get all this stuff, but they're going to claim cry foul. But most of the people who do that, they typically had a parent or a relative who helped them out.
I just see someone else, Sheila, texting me this morning, said she saw that where Donald Trump mentioned a male governor from out west to possibly be his VP. That would be a short list. I wonder who that might be. Do you have any idea?
I'm not entirely sure right now who she would be referencing.
All right. Now, here's the tough question. Joe DeBose joining us this morning. He's a political strategist. He works literally coast to coast. What's the bigger race you're working? Utah or... What's your biggest thing that you're working on this cycle?
So I'm working on the 12th district, Bailey versus Boss. Right. I'm working on the governor's campaign in Utah. I'm working on a open congressional district in Utah right now, trying to get a good conservative member there to replace the incumbent.
Right.
And several other legislative races in here in different states.
Here's a text from Andy, Kristi Noem for VP.
Kristi Noem, you know, she's got a little bit of scandal in there, but I could see him possibly doing that. She's definitely been positioning herself to be able to do a lot of different things, but it determines whether or not Trump wants anything that could distract from him.
Okay. Now I'm going to throw out some ideas. You tell me whether I'm nuts, okay? What drives people to the poll? Now, I've told you this story before, and I can't shake it. I'm at a Kenny Gray fundraising event. I'm not given a choice, but I'm there. And I asked Mr. Gray, I was very young, probably 24, 5, less, what makes people vote? He says people will crawl across the street on broken glass to vote against you, but they won't walk across the street to vote for you.
Absolutely.
Okay? I've never forgotten that because it's true. What drives people to the poll? This year, I feel the Democrats want abortion to drive you to the poll. Republicans want migration and illegal immigration to drive you to the poll. And the American voter will be driven by the poll by economics, by the fact they go grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm. So, Tom, there's actually going to be two folds this time. The people living paycheck to paycheck, those are the people that are going to be driven by their groceries. But what we're seeing right now in this odd economy that we're in, it's not good, but it's not bad for everyone. There's a lot of people still doing good in this economy, but it's not the majority of the American people. So everyone's going to be driven by immigration and the border right now. And I believe that that's going to be the wedge issue that could get us across the finish line. Because, you know, right now, I'm not doing worse in this economy, although I completely understand that this economy is terrible. Immigration's making me mad. It's also making the people who are living paycheck to paycheck mad because our inflation's driving up. We're spending money on healthcare, the resources. You're looking up there at Chicago. There's people in airports. They're being strung low. They're asking for more and more money because J.B. Pritzker, in his infinite wisdom, decided we needed to be a sanctuary state, sanctuary city, and he wants to keep those policies, while Rauner is just as much to blame for those policies as well because but, you know, we've got to do something.
And people forget that. Rauner brought the Trust Act. I mean, and I asked him live on this very same time slot. Governor Rauner, is the Trust Act a sanctuary lost? No, it's not. And J.B. Pritzker said the same thing to me. So, you know, right? People forget that. Rauner signed that law.
Mm-hmm.
So listening to you speak, first thing that came to my mind, Joe DeBose joining as political strategist, was immigration is the economy. Especially when it comes to the state budget and the nation's budget, and it's—I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, it's—we've got to secure the border, Tom. We've got to secure the border, and we've got to get the economy working again. We can't keep printing money at the rate we've been printing money. I mean, people are going to show up and vote. I mean, they're not going to show up. You know, abortion, I believe, was punted back to the states where it should be. I think that's a state issue.
But there's still—I mean, there was literally new ads out saying Donald Trump's responsible for Roe versus Wade. Literally, an ad campaign started national Joe Biden this weekend on that very theme.
Well, that's because the Democrats failed to understand the Constitution, Tom. It's not Donald Trump. It was the founding fathers, and we finally got a Supreme Court who got it right. The Supreme Court doesn't always get it right. I mean, you're looking at a two-thirds compromise. I think that's one of the biggest abominations in our nation's history, is saying that an American human being is two-thirds a person. You know, but, you know, eventually the Supreme Court does get things right. I trust the process, and I hope that, you know, we'll continue to move forward. But it's not going to be abortion. Abortion's not putting food on your table. It's not keeping your family safe. You know, we need a border. We need a border wall. And we need the economy working again.
So Democrats will frame it as a freedom issue.
They can do that all they want to. But in these states, there's laws, especially these swing states, there's laws that protect women's health care. And but I don't necessarily view abortion as health care personally. But that's protected in a lot of these swing states that are going to be on the table as well.
One of our listeners on the American Monument text line texting saying, for me, it's primarily illegal immigration and the economy. That's how he's going to vote. And to be honest with you, I still have some issues with the way COVID was handled in this country. That's still, for me, it's still because you never learn more about a person than when they're under stress.
Yes, sir.
And so you really find out who people are. And when I say this is a an epidemic of the unvaccinated while they're hammering on the table, you know, and I have those things been forgotten?
I certainly haven't forgotten it, Tom. There's a lot of people that are going to remember it. You know, there's a lot of people still angry and engaged. There's people who weren't engaged before 2020 who got engaged after COVID and the lockdown started happening. And I hope those mama bears and those people who are still angry stay pissed off, because we've got a country to take back, and we're only going to take it back. And it's not Republican, Democrat. There's a lot of weak-kneed politicians out there who haven't stood up. And ask yourselves, in 2020, 2021, what were they doing? Were they standing up, sounding the alarm? Were they standing up and doing something and pushing back? Because if they weren't, it's time to get them out of there.
Here's Walter just texting in now saying, Trump frames the abortion issue as Democratic extremism. Here's another. What's driving me to vote? My 401k losing $200,000 over 3 years. Mm-hmm. And now I have to keep working to hopefully recover in the next couple of years. And I'm 62. Now, that, to me, is one of the most important text messages we've received today, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. The economy's been terrible for a lot of people. Like I said, it's been very good for some people. It's been very poor for some people. There are going to be people who will be voting based on the economy, and rightfully so. Inflation's through the roof. And I think they'll be voting for economy and immigration, illegal immigration. We've got to fix both if we're going to fix this country. I think they go hand in hand.
You know, it's interesting. I saw Asa Hutchinson came out, and I'm endorsing Nikki Haley, and I'm thinking, thank Asa for coming around. What'd you get? 0.02% of the vote in Iowa. Thanks for your support, pal.
She's going to have about a 27-vote bump in New Hampshire now.
Here's the problem. All the candidates drop out before the election begins. I suffer from enough of an idealism that I feel a voter should be picking people. The voters, not polls. The voters, not campaign money. I'm sorry, but I just can't understand leaving a race before anybody's voted. All the polls number, and I get that because, you know, that's the new world, but I don't think that's the way it's supposed to be.
I agree, Tom. I certainly wouldn't be backing out the day before an election if my name were on the ballot. But the fact of the matter is this race is over. Donald Trump's going to be the Republican nominee. I believe he'll beat Nikki Haley tomorrow. She's hyped it up so much. I believe it's win or go home for Nikki Haley, because if she doesn't win in New Hampshire, she'll have no momentum to win in her home state, because I think Donald Trump's polling well above her in South Carolina and nationally as well. I think this race is over. In order for Nikki Haley to even stay in the race or consider staying in the race, she has to get very close or win New Hampshire.
Now, I love in this message from Jeff and Marion, who says, around a dozen states are expected to have abortion issues on the ballot. This will drive Dems to the polls. Illinois has a Democratic initiative every 4 years during governor's races to ensure Dems come out to vote. Jeff and Marion, I think that's a pretty astute observation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last time we had the what they called the Workers' Rights Amendment.
Here's Walter speaking as an Iowan. Iowa is not nothing, and I have to agree with you there, too. As David Yepsen, I'm sure, would let us know. Now, here's another question that I wanted to pose to you, and Dennis is sending it here at the proper time. I got to tell you, my eyes rolled back in my head, and I said guttural words when I learned that an Illinois legislature wants to mail, legislator wants to mail everyone a ballot. You and I have talked about voter integrity and ballot harvesting and the way things have changed, and Dennis' question is, how do we stop election fraud? It's even more difficult, I think, Dennis, when people won't admit there's election fraud.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I believe in voter ID. You look at California's example, they sent out 22 million ballots and they have 15 million voters. If you're going to send unsolicited mail-in ballots, you're letting the people who run elections choose who win elections instead of voters. What we need is a verifiable ID to go with these mail-in ballots. Because, you know, Utah, where I work a lot in Utah, and I win a lot of elections there, and it's all vote by mail. But the differences between the way Utah runs in states like California and Illinois is Utah cleans up their voter rolls every election cycle, something that needs to happen regardless if you're doing vote
and
by mail.
It hasn't done in Illinois, and we've seen some ridiculously off numbers.
I mean, and then, you know, we've got to have voter ID. We need to have a holographic signature that can be verified and kept with that ballot in case there's an audit of the elections. And they don't do either of those things. They just take it, they throw away. And honestly, Tom, what I would like to see implemented if we're going to do vote by mail is that they have to be postmarked a week before the election.
So that we get the answers on election day.
Exactly. If you want to restore confidence to the voting process, people need to go back to seeing who won the election the night of the election. Now, you're going to see races like the 2000 presidential election where it may go a little bit faster. But I'd say right now, Florida hasn't had a hiccup like that in a long time. And if states like Florida and Texas can tell us who won their election on Election Day, then there's no excuse for states like Illinois and Pennsylvania to not be able to do the same.
All right. So ballot harvesting?
It's sadly legal here in Illinois, but I don't think it should be legal, Tom. I mean, in the Saline County where I grew up, and we have to participate in the exact same thing. You knock on someone's door, you tell them who you are, and you point at their ballot, and you tell them who to vote for, you sign that you assisted them. It seems illegal. If you ask a regular person if it's illegal, they'll say yes. But
well, the perception that when somebody has that ballot and they have a 6-inch stack of ballots cramming it in a box, and we're just that. I mean, there are movies. There's no voter fraud. There's somebody, and they bring them by the box and put them in the mailboxes.
Yeah, they do this here, especially in Illinois. And, you know, we've got to crack down on that because we all want free, fair elections. We want everyone who wants to vote to be able to vote, especially if they're a legal voter in this state. They should be able to vote.
One person, one vote.
Exactly. I mean, it's the case. I mean, I always think back to that Bob Dole letter at his funeral when he said, you know, if I hope they bury me in Chicago so I can continue to vote. And it's the problem. We're historically known for voter fraud in this state, and it's sad.
Here's a couple of, here's a good one. I can't exercise my Second Amendment right without a photo ID. Why my vote? Why not vote? Thanks for that one.
I will say, Tom, I think you should have to show an ID to vote, but I don't think you need a driver's license to exercise your Second Amendment.
Agreed. Now, you should, an ID. Right?
Yep.
And what's interesting about that is I still pull out my license to prove it to me when I go to vote. It's because that's, and I know them. They know me.
It's the same thing in my county. When I came back in, I showed them my ID and they're like, oh, no, you don't have to do that. But I know who you are and I appreciate that.
Now, here's one. Link the ballot to the registered voter by an ID number of some sort, some form. And
that's one of the laws they have in Utah. Yeah. So actually, oddly enough, Tom, so when Darren Bailey was running for governor, he proposed laws such as that to help secure it, but most Republicans in the legislature didn't get on board with it.
Yeah, he goes, it doesn't matter to when or where or when a person votes when you have that ID number.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they could do it so those IDs, the way they work in Utah, you could track it when it's mailed to you. You can track it when it's received. You can track it when when you get it. You can track it when it's received by your county clerk and when it's counted. And then you can go into your unique serial number through the blockchain and figure out who it was.
All right. And there's another one from Philip in Goreville who says the rules to get a voter registration card should be the same as those to get a FOID card. Right?
I bet if we did that, the registration laws would change really fast.
Yeah. They would definitely come around. It's always good to have you in studio, Chief.
It's always a blessing to be here, Tom. I love being home, and I love being on your show. It's always great to have a good conversation with you.
You ready for me to finish up with you?
Yeah, what do you got? I'm ready.
One of the things is interesting. I ran into a friend of mine who literally drives East Coast, West Coast, North to South, and delivers truck driver.
Okay.
And he says, you know, the only place that's left that feels like America is Southern Indiana and Southern Illinois. I travel across the country. I meet people everywhere. Wonderful. But it doesn't feel like America. I thought that was an interesting thing. You travel around. You're born in El Dorado, live in Marion now. What do you see when you go around this country? When it comes to running elections and with your Southern Illinois perspective, what have you learned from the rest of the country that you remember when you come home?
You know, I will say that nothing feels like home, Tom. And there's a lot of freedom-loving people here in the state. And, you know, I think the COVID response in Southern Illinois is a prime example of that. When I come home, there's no one wearing masks here, but there are a lot of places. But I will say, you know, my time working in Utah and some of these other states, one of the things I have always recognized about Utah is every time you drive down the interstate, you can't go about 200 feet without seeing an American flag. And that's a red state. That's, if you look it up, it's the best run state in the nation right now, period. And to me, that patriotism, that feeling of, you know, loving your country and helping your community, that's something that we still have a lot of here in Southern Illinois, but it's something that's depleting in a lot of places across the country. And when we stop giving people a hand up and we start giving them a handout, we start to lose the fabric of our nation and we start to kind of break away from where we need to be. And we need to get back to that if we're going to turn our country around.
Political strategist Joe DeBose. Joe, thanks a ton, buddy.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
844.